Good morning, Your Honor, and may it please the court. My name is Eric Tung, and I represent the petitioner, Ramazani Verlaine Deyu. I would like to reserve 3 minutes of time for rebuttal. Mr. Deyu escaped Congo because he feared persecution. He belonged to an opposition party in the Congo, and he led protest marches against the Congolese president, who had sought to hold onto power beyond his constitutionally prescribed term limits. For Mr. Deyu's actions, Congolese government soldiers retaliated. They went to Mr. Deyu's political office that he had set up in Kinshasa, and they destroyed it. Not only that, they entered the office and they killed his brother and two of his political associates who were there working on that day.
When I looked at the record, the only evidence that I saw that it was the presidential guard who had done that was the neighbor's report to Deyu's uncle. Was there any other evidence that supported his belief that it was the presidential guard that had done that?
That's the primary evidence, Your Honor, his testimony, which the IJ said that she believed. But Mr. Deyu had also...
it was his testimony that a neighbor had told his uncle, that his uncle had told him what the neighbor said. That's the evidence, is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. There were numerous country conditions reports too that were submitted that also detailed the government security forces going into similar headquarters of the same political party that Mr. Deyu belonged to and at around the same time. So that's evidence as well. But why was the
IJ, compelled to accept the conclusion that these were government forces?
Well, the IJ, to be clear, on record page 221, 222, said that she gave Mr. Deyu's testimony the full weight of evidence, that she believed him, and for that reason told Mr. Deyu that he need not submit any further corroborative documentation. And in reliance on that, Mr. Deyu did not submit any further corroborating evidence, even though he was eager and willing to do so. It violates Ninth Circuit precedent, Your Honor, for the IJ then to conduct this procedural bait and switch, essentially, Mr. Deyu did not submit enough evidence.
What evidence would you bring forward to show that these were government forces? Because I don't know that we've seen that.
Right. Mr. Deyu could have done a number of things. But again, he didn't. He was told he didn't need to because...
I don't see that on the page you cited. You said, "I'm not making an adverse credibility finding. I am finding that you are credible and your testimony was given full weight as evidence." But the testimony, of course, was that his uncle had told him what a neighbor had told him. And then the IJ goes on to say, "But even with the documents and the evidence, I don't believe you meet the requirements under the United States law." So this was all at the end of the hearing. So I don't see anything saying you don't need any corroboration. What are you specifically referencing?
I'm referencing, Your Honor, page 151. There are several places in the record, Your Honor, where the IJ tells Mr. Deyu that if your, quote, and I'm quoting from 151, quote, "If your testimony is credible, the United States government does not require you to submit any additional documents." And again, on pages 165 through 166, the IJ says, "Assuming you are credible, no documents are going to be necessary. There is only a problem with documentation if you are not credible." And again, on page 212.
I'm looking at page 165. And so what language are you specifically referring to?
The language where she says that assuming that you are credible, and this is part of the sentence, "Assuming you are credible, no documents are going to be necessary. there is only a problem with documentation if you're not credible.
Right, but that doesn't tell him that his testimony will meet the burden of proof, right? That seems to be a separate issue.
That's in reference to his mother and the medical issue and to get documents. It doesn't seem relevant to this issue.
Well, Your Honor,
I'm missing something.
Your Honor, the fact that the IJ makes that statement in several places, it's a representation to Mr. Dayu that once the IJ finds that he is credible and to be believed and that he was believed, he need not submit any documentation in support.
I think you're mistaking the credibility determination with proof of what needs to be proven. In other words, the IJ said he was credible. His testimony was credible. His testimony was that his uncle had told him that a neighbor had told him that the people who were in his office were the presidential guard. But his credibility doesn't mean that the IJ needs to believe that it's true, that because he didn't testify he saw them or he witnessed it. So that doesn't compel the IJ to determine if it's true that it was a presidential guard there.
Well, Your Honor, under the Ninth Circuit case, I Jun Z, if the IJ did have problems with this hearsay testimony, which she did not raise, she did not point that out to be an issue, she would have been required under that case to provide Mr. Dayu with the notice and opportunity to submit corroborative evidence.
So, Mr.
And that
Tung,
she did not do.
Let me ask you to take it just a little bit different direction. Let's assume that it was the government or some representatives of the government, and the IJ heard the testimony, believed what he had been told. You still have another hurdle to jump in terms of meeting the statute. So if you would address that as to why the ultimate determination was not supported by substantial evidence.
You're right, Your Honor. And if I just can preface that real quickly, I think the IJ's decision-making was unreasoned and contradictory, having accepted the testimony and then later saying, I find the testimony speculative. I think that is grounds alone for granting the petition. However, to your direct question, Judge McEwen, even accepting all of those facts and the facts that Mr. Dayu testified to, threats to his family members and the death that resulted from the government officials entering his office, death of his brother and the two political associates, under Ninth Circuit law, that compels a finding of persecution. And I would point to the cases Navas, Salazar Pakar, Mendoza Pablo, and Parada. Those cases, the court had found that the record in those cases, which involved very similar acts of a person being targeted for his political beliefs and where his family members were harmed and other political associates were harmed and in some instances killed.
So in Salazar, there was a direct threat, right? The Shining Path had painted something on his house. So here was there was his mother in Angola said to him while he was in Peru that they unspecified were coming looking for you. Was there anything more direct than that?
Well, I would argue, Judge Ikuda, that the facts in Salazar are analogous here because his office was targeted. Mr. Dayu's political office was ransacked and painted all over, and they took a photograph of him from the wall. That, to me, is very on point with Salazar, in which the petitioner there had also received his house was painted. And so the court there found that that was a direct threat. So to hear, not only were his mother and father were threatened unless he came back, the fact that it was his political headquarters and the fact that his employees and his own brother were killed during a very turbulent time in the Congo is evidence of direct threat to Mr. Dayu, and the IJ erred in completely disregarding that as evidence of a direct threat. Your Honor, I think, oh, sorry, go ahead, Mr. Judge McEwen.
Yeah, I just have one question with that. Even accepting all that, we have cases where a single threat or a single incident really isn't enough. Do you have cases that would get you over that hurdle?
Yes, Your Honor. I think the cases cited in the brief, Mendoza, Pablo in particular, where the family was targeted, and the court there had rejected the BIA's contention that secondhand exposure to threats was insufficient. The court there found that that was, and that could qualify as persecution. Salazar-Picar, again, is the case that is, I think, most on point. But here we don't have an isolated incident, Your Honor. We have the government soldiers coming into his office, killing his family member and his political associates, and after that also continued to threat his family, which prompted them to flee themselves. So I wouldn't characterize this as an isolated incident, and I think one has to view the sufferings that he encountered in the context of what was going on in the Congo. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Dayu had submitted numerous country conditions reports to demonstrate that people in his position, particularly when he was a leader of a youth organization that belonged to the opposition party, that they were targeted and their headquarters were also sacked.
The two incidents, that the only ones I saw in the record were what happened to his office, to the death of his brother and the two other staff members in his office being attacked, and the report of his mother when she was in Angola and he was in Peru that they were coming looking for you. Was there anything else in the record about relating to him personally?
That is what we have, Your Honor. There's nothing else, Your Honor. But where the IJ had erred, and this is the reasoning that the IJ had relied on and that the BIA adopted, was that none of that counted as evidence of a direct threat to Mr. Dayu. And that is just simply error. And the court, under the principles of Chenery, should not affirm on a different basis that the IJ had expressly relied on.
Do you want to save remaining time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Mr. Fulton?
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Duncan Fulton on behalf of the Attorney General. In this case, the agency properly denied relief based on the record evidence, which does not compel a contrary finding. This case is about the burden of proof that Mr. Dayu failed to meet. Dating back to 2011, when he first became politically active, Mr. Dayu simply experienced no harm. He himself experienced no threats. In fact, there's nothing to show he had any direct communication with government-backed forces that he fears.
Can you address Mr. Tung's point, the argument that the IJ during the proceedings may have suggested to him that he provided enough information?
Certainly, Judge Bress. The portions of the record that the petitioner just cited are general statements of law that occurred early in his proceedings. So general statements of law about the burden of proof and corroborative evidence standards, that's just simply an explanation of an individual's rights in removal proceedings. But here, after we got through the proceedings and, you know, by the end of it, the IJ's ruling, if we look at it, was not based on a failure to corroborate. This was a failure to show burden of proof, which, as we know, is kind of an umbrella over a failure to corroborate. So that's not what happened here. And in fact, the immigration judge actually gave several opportunities. She once continued proceedings. She delayed the individual here in a month. And then at the end of proceedings, she actually gave Mr. Dayu the additional week he requested to find more evidence. So based on that procedural posture and the immigration judge's explicit findings that weren't based on a failure to corroborate, that's simply immaterial here. As far as past persecution, we know that Mr. Dayu was not harmed. He was not threatened. Those are established facts. He testified that he was never harmed at AR 194, where he says, quote, "I have never been harmed." He says at all the marches, he never experienced any issues. That's at 185. Now, Mr. Dave essentially argues that even though he was never harmed and never threatened, the office attack in May 2016 effectively qualifies as a threat to himself. But that's simply not the case, Your Honors. Substantial evidence supports the immigration judge's finding. He only believes that it was a threat to him because he was told so, as this court just noted. He was told so by his uncle, who heard that from a third-party neighbor, that presidential soldiers were the ones who conducted the attack and were looking for him. But Your Honors, Mr. Dayu hasn't shown us any of that. He hasn't submitted sufficient evidence. We don't know who this neighbor was. We don't know if this neighbor witnessed the events firsthand. We simply don't know what happened that day. We don't know how the neighbor communicated this. We don't know if these individuals mentioned Mr. Dayu by name during the attack, if they said they were targeting him. There's simply insufficient evidence.
What is the significance of the IJ's adverse credibility finding? That the IJ believed that Dayu believed these statements, or that these statements reflected the truth of the matter? How do you read this?
So we do have an explicit positive credibility finding here. We have that fact, but that's a different question than, does an IJ, when making a positive credibility finding, have to give credit to every piece of speculation that a witness testifies to? And that simply can't be the case, Your Honors. It was the events that Mr. Dayu is testifying to, they were outside of his personal knowledge. He's making predictions about future events, and he's certainly entitled to opine on those, but ultimately, that's the job of the fact finder and the adjudicator to decide whether he has met his burden of proof, and he hasn't here. So there is no inconsistency, as the petitioner argued.
Well, if you assume that the IJ didn't discredit this information, where does that leave you in terms of burden of proof?
Judge McCone, I don't know that we have findings here saying that the immigration judge discredited that. I think if we look at the immigration judge's...
Maybe you misunderstood my question. Let's assume that the IJ did not discredit it because there's nothing on the record to suggest that. If that is the posture we look at it, what is the government's position?
And you're talking specifically about the speculation that it was presidential soldiers who committed the attack?
Right.
So again, that's not what the facts we have in this record here, but to answer your Honor's question, that's simply not a factor that's going to be dispositive in this case. And the reason for that is if we look, for example, the petitioner just cited a number of cases that where this court has looked at the situation of where threats, you know, there's threats to family members here that can qualify and give rise to harm of past persecution to a petitioner. And when we actually look at those cases, they're much different than what we have here. For example, the petitioner cited the case Salazar. In that case, as Your Honors noted, there was a direct threat to the petitioner, and in all these cases, there's been threats or harm to the petitioner. So that case, there was a threat to the petitioner. He was directly received a death threat multiple times from guerrillas as a local council member. The guerrillas went searching for him. They couldn't find him, so they instead harmed his family. They assaulted both of his parents. They later rounded up a bunch of people in the town square, and they publicly executed half a dozen individuals, including the petitioner's fellow council members and his supervisor. So the harm in that case is much more severe than what we have here, where we don't have a threat. And even as Your Honor suggests, if we were to assume, which we can't on this record, that they were presidential soldiers, that one threat simply is not enough under this court's precedent to show past persecution.
Well, see, the IJ did find that Dayu had not met his burden to show that the perpetrators were government authorities. And so we have that finding, and the IJ does give reasons for that.
Your Honor, we have findings here that the IJ found that theory to be speculative. And then the IJ explicitly, when discussing past persecution, well-founded fear, on multiple occasions, said that her ruling was based on the burden of proof, said that Mr. Dayu simply did not meet his burden here. So we know that given there was no threat to Mr. Dayu, there was no harm. The harm to family members under these circumstances is insufficient to qualify. he has not established past persecution. Next, the question becomes, has Mr. Dayu established his burden to show a well-founded fear independently of that past claim of past persecution? And his theory here was that he would be singled out for future persecution, and the immigration judge properly rejected that theory, and there's simply insufficient evidence to show that. As your honors noted, in addition to the one incident in May 2016 of the office attack, the only other piece of individualized evidence, if we want to call it that, is the sole threat that the family received sometime in 2016 after the petitioner left his country. So we just have the one threat to family, which we don't know much about other than they were threatened. They said that something could happen to them. And that's simply insufficient to show his burden. I also want to talk about country conditions evidence because the petitioner pointed that out. Contrary to what the petitioner argues, the immigration judge did specifically recognize country conditions evidence here. That's at AR 121. The immigration judge notes the country reports. And the immigration judge acknowledged that there was political violence occurring in Congo, but nonetheless, that generalized country conditions evidence was insufficient with viewed with the two instances which this court had noted, the May 2016 attack and the threat to the family later. So when weighing all that, he simply did not meet his burden to show a particularized threat of future persecution at the requisite level. So based on that, I also want to note that the immigration judge, when discussing country conditions evidence, also noted that at the time of the March 2018 immigration court hearing, the immigration judge noted that there were elections occurring later that year and that President Kabila, whom the petitioner opposed, could be voted out of office. Now, of course, now we know that is in fact what happened, and the current president is a member of the petitioner's current party. Now, while that's beyond the scope of what the agency found here, the mere possibility of that occurring that the immigration judge found is relevant when weighing the country conditions evidence versus the individualized evidence, which together was insufficient. So given all of that, your honors, we don't have past persecution. We haven't seen well-founded fear established. And as we've discussed, the burden of proof, the immigration judge, there's nothing compelling the immigration judge to say, well, you haven't met your burden. It's okay that the immigration judge found you haven't met your burden, notwithstanding we have a positive credibility finding, but that doesn't mean the immigration judge was required to credit every piece of speculation that the petitioner raised. So moving on, your honors, Mr. Dayu also did not establish relief under the Convention Against Torture. In this case, he had the burden to again show a particularized risk of future torture under the more likely than not standard, and for the same reasons already discussed, the generalized country conditions evidence simply was insufficient here in light of the fact that Mr. Dayu has not himself experienced past torture. In fact, he's experienced no past harm and no past threats. So given that, notwithstanding the country conditions evidence, which the immigration judge considered, he simply did not meet his burden, and nothing in the record compels a contrary finding. So unless there are any other questions, your honors, the government would simply request that the petition for review be denied in this case.
Thank you. Mr. Tung, you have some rebuttal time.
Thank you, your honor. At a minimum, your honors, a remand is required to clarify the unreasoned decision-making by the IJ. On the one hand, you have the IJ saying to Mr. Dayu, I believe you. I believe your story. And that's on, again, pages 221 to 222. She said that, and for that reason said, Mr. Dayu, you do not need to provide any more documentary evidence, because that's what the law is, as my colleague on the other side has acknowledged. And for that reason, Mr. Dayu relied on that statement and relied on his testimony. It's not correct for the IJ then later to say that, well, Mr. Dayu, after having you testified and after believing you, I now discredit your testimony as speculative. That is contradictory, Your Honor, and does not allow Mr. Deyu, as is required under Ajun Z, to provide corroborative evidence. If the IJ had found that the different levels of hearsay posed a problem, she should have allowed Mr. Deyu to present additional evidence, could have been in the form of a neighbor's testimony or the uncle's testimony or other kind of documentary evidence that would have been corroborative. She told Mr. Deyu that that wasn't necessary because she had believed what Mr. Deyu had told her. Those contradictory statements and lack of reasoning, Your Honor, warrants a remand here. And a remand too would be required, as Mr. Fulton pointed out, in light of the changed country conditions. Again, it's not in the record, so that would need to be clarified on remand too. But the primary problem here is the unfairness that the IJ gave to Mr. Deyu in telling him that I believe you and you don't need to present anything more, and then later saying to him that his testimony was not to be credited because it was too speculative. Those two things don't add up, Your Honors. And for that reason, I would request Your Honor to grant the petition for review, to reverse the BIA's denial of relief, or at a minimum to remand for further proceedings.
Thank you. I'd like to thank both counsel for the argument this morning. The case just argued of Deyu versus Wilkinson is submitted.